Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a sustainability presentation from April 2018. Mr. Lauri Saarinen, lecturer, University of Lausanne, Faculty of Business and Economics presents Value of Manufacturing Flexibility.
Excellent afternoon. I'm Lauri Saarinen from University of Lausanne in Switzerland. But as you might see from my blonde hair, I'm actually from Finland. Finland and the weather here is just great. So I'm going to give you a talk on valuing manufacturing flexibility, which might sound like something that is somewhat different to the topic of this fair overall. The key is on how do we enable more local production, local supply chains, local value chains, and by using these local value chains, increase the sustainability. And why I came here today was that we have been exploring these ideas in US with some garment industry people and finding out that actually we could be reviving some of the value chains in US, and that's my why it might be also interesting here in Europe. So my focus, I'm a manufacturing operations guy, so I'm not specifically, not so much in garments industry, and it might show during this talk, so bear with me. I have to say that I walk around here before coming for this presentation a bit, and now I know where my cycling and skiing jackets and cycling jackets come from, it seems. So why supply? Why sustainability? Oh yes, I'm also so university background. So I teach it in Lausanne and then do research on how do we use speed in order to make profits and in order to be more sustainable. So let's go ahead. So what is the fastest way to increase sustainability in garment supply chain? Anyone wanna take a hit at it, or should I? Well, I claim that the fastest way would be producing what is actually needed. So one problem that we have in garment supply chain and in most supply chains around the world is that these are extended operations. We need to decide 6 to 12 months before we are going to know what is actually demanded, what the consumer actually wants. We need to decide and start producing. And these guesses that we make, these commitments that we make, won't always hit the nail in the head. So sometimes we make wrong forecast. World is not perfect. And because of these wrong forecasts, we end up throwing away a lot of stuff, burning a lot of stuff, using materials, shipping stuff all over the oceans unnecessarily, because we're not going to sell the stuff. And this is the key. And saving this waste is the key that we can find a way to make a faster and more local supply chain through these savings. And this is the money that we can use if we can reduce this waste. So it is actually quite a topical issue. Let's take an example. So fast fashion and slow supply chains. H&M reported, a retailer here, I have to say that upstream of the supply chain, I'm a bit more on a vague path. H&M reported last year after 2016 results that they've realized that the competition is moving faster. They need to invest in supply chain as fashion rivalry intensifies, mainly due to the new e-commerce rivals like ASOS and Boohoo and these kind of players. And then a few weeks ago, they reported the results of 2017. And now we have a problem. So this risk that we shouldn't be having to have has materialized. We have had a mismatch between the demand and the supply. Something that we've planned 12 months ago ordered and which has been produced, then shipped to Sweden, is not sellable anymore. So we have a huge problem, 4.3 billion in unsold clothes. And since this is fast fashion, these clothes will be unsellable pretty soon. You can't go deep enough in discounting in order to get rid of this. So what do they do? The scale of the problem illustrates H&M's vast size. Obviously, this is why I have the example. As one of the world's largest clothing manufacturers, it produces hundreds of millions of items each year. There are so many that a power plant in Västerås in Sweden, close to Stockholm, relies partly on burning defective products that the retailer cannot sell. So soon they will be burning $4.3 billion dollars worth of clothes in Västerås and producing electricity in Sweden. So these long supply chains extended supply chains lead into quite bizarre outcomes. So we harvest cotton, we produce stuff in East Asia, we ship it over to Sweden, we burn it in an electricity and combined power plant, and then we drive green miles in Teslas. This is not really the sustainable way to go. So this is the sustainability side. If we can postpone, so if we invest in faster supply chain, if we can postpone the decision until we have a better understanding of what is actually needed, then we can decrease this mismatch between demand and supply, and we can hopefully decrease this kind of effects. So closing the loop in garment supply chain, using recycled clothing, that is the way for the future, and that's going to solve a lot of problems that you have in the sustainability of fast fashion supply chains. But even faster, we could right now just stop producing stuff that is not needed and save those resources. On the financial side, so there's a financial effect. I work at the business school. So I understand that in order to be sustainable, we need to make a business case for sustainability. We need to actually make money from these speedy supply chains. And how to do that? That's the topic of next 20 minutes. So Goldman Sachs found out, this is from 2016, the growth rate of sales of fashion retailers and the supply chain lead times in months. And it seems that they found out that really the growth, the money-making capacity of fast fashion retailers is tightly linked to the supply chain lead times. So the old so kind of a leader Inditex, Zara, is here. They've done it through decades through an intuition of their chairman and founder, that they vertically integrated very aggressively and aligned from retail to the top level of the supply chain, ways to use speed in order to not have to predict the fashions, but to be able to be so fast that they can follow the fashions. But now we have new leaders that are growing even faster, which are ASOS and Boohoo, and obviously that's partly due to the e-commerce stuff. But Goldman Sachs even said that they think that a critical part of their ability to grow and make money is that they have approximately 4 weeks from design to store lead time, which is so. I haven't worked in garments for past few years. I work in running shoes, and I know that the reality in running shoes, it still is 6 months lead time from an order and 12 months lead time from design to customer, minimum 12 months. 6 months from, if I order now running shoes, they will be most likely made in Vietnam or Indonesia, and to get them to the European retailer, it will take 5 to 6 months. So this is totally a different type of operation that is going on here. And Goldman Sachs, they are not necessarily known for their sustainability and economical views. ecological views, but they are interested in money. So one more interesting example. So Adidas Speed Factory here in Bavaria and the next one in Atlanta is aiming to somewhat change the reality of running shoes and sneakers in order to take these 6 to 9 months lead times down to few weeks. And the vision is that actually we will be buying, in a couple of years, we will be buying customized sneakers with one-piece flow going through the automated factory. So we'll see what happens, but clearly there is interest and investment in these topics. Sorry. So before I go to the math part, so to speak, just to summarize the motivation. So clearly this kind of a faster and shorter supply chains seem to be having an interest in the business, especially now in the retail side. But as I see it, as these retail players will demand shorter and faster response from the suppliers, this effect will ripple through the value chains all the way to the fiber through some years. And key for the money-making key is to be able to align the speed and flexibility to the customer value. So investing and building more costly supply chains without a clear view how it delivers consumer value is just a waste of money. So that's going to drive you out of business. So next point is that how do we do it properly? So why did we go for, why do we have so long supply chains? First point. Few things. Scale economy is one of the clear ones. So the larger batch of running shoes we can produce, if we can take the minimum order quantity of a running shoe from 100 to 1,000, from 1,000 to 10,000, from 10,000 to 100,000, we can decrease the unit cost of the single one. And this is what drives the lengthening of the supply chain. Another one is obviously in a labor-intensive business, the labor cost is a big factor. So what we end up is usually, compared if we would go local, is 15 to 30% cheaper unit costs. One challenge is that when you have a long supply chain, when you need to fly in quality assurance guys, when you need to fly in engineers, when you need to fly in designers from continent to continent, that also costs money. This money is usually not included in the analysis of what does it cost to source from a supplier. It should be. What if we did local production, more local, somewhere we can drive to and actually get the weekly shipment? So at least it is easier to match production to demand. So if we don't need to forecast 12 months, but we can do 1 month, or we can produce to order, it will be easier to produce what is actually needed. And it's easier to manage. And one thing which is clear, but this depends on the industry, it also facilitates the innovation part. So when we can increase the speed of prototyping, testing, going to market cycles, this gives us possibilities to do more what customers want and test out in the markets faster. So this is clearly what the fast fashion guys are also doing. And then the sustainability part. So when to invest? So there is as we saw, there is a trade-off. Longer supply chains are cheaper. If we want to be faster, it's more costly. When does it make sense to pay this money? So this is actually finally where our university work comes into question. So we, a few years ago, we developed this cost differential frontier tool. So this is based on some application of option value theory to supply chains. So basically, we're asking the question that if we have an option to wait until we know what the demand is, how much would that waiting be worth for? And this had been taken use by the US Department of Commerce and also in Switzerland. some industry associations, and this is a way. So the policymakers are obviously also companies, but policymakers are quite interested in this because we are talking about reindustrialization and these kind of things, which are quite interesting for politicians. So I'm going to show you the tool. So here is going to be a few slides, slightly more technical or something, but I'll try to make them approachable. So this is our tool, Cost Premium Frontier. You can go online right now. I need to put the link on, but you can ask me after the presentation. Just Google it and play around with it right now. So if you're a purchaser, a sourcing guy, you can go if you have few different suppliers, you can go and test them, and what would be the value of paying if you have few different faster and slower supplier, and how much higher unit cost can be justified by a shorter lead time. There's only few things actually that we need to make this kind of a math analysis. We need a price for the product. We need a long lead time cost. So this would be the longest possible lead time, the lowest cost that is available in the market. And one key thing, we need a residual value. So we need to know, if this is a seasonal product, we need to know how much of the value is retained if we did not sell the product during the season. If it's toilet paper, it's just an inventory holding cost. If it's a one unique customized piece of a dress, might be zero, the residual value. So that's the difference. And then we need some estimation of the demand uncertainty. So how big surprises are we facing in when we are doing our forecast? And here we have two curves here, an orange and gray one. And here we have on the y-axis we have the cost premium justified. And now we are comparing. So here we have the relative lead time. That means that lead time of one would be the longest possible that is available there. For the example of sneakers with the Adidas factory, that would be the 9 months from wherever. And then zero would be that we can operate once we already know the orders for these running shoes. So that would be that we have the Adidas Speedback factory here in Bavaria, and we are getting orders, and we are producing and filling those orders each week. So for a product that has a high margin and a very unpredictable demand and a high obsolescence, so meaning that it loses most of its value if we're not selling it, the cost that we should be willing to pay to reduce all of the demand uncertainty, to get the orders and be able to produce to those orders, would be almost 100%. These are some example numbers. So basically it means that we should be willing to pay the double of the long lead time supplier unit cost in order to get the stuff when we need it. On the other hand, when we have products which have predictable demand, so there's low uncertainty on what is the future demands on this product. And then if it's toilet paper, so it holds its value well, or in clothing or garment would be white t-shirts. So white t-shirts we can always get rid of, I assume. I'm not an expert, but I assume that with a certain reduction on the sales price at the retail, we can get rid of white t-shirts always. So these products are easy to manage. These don't justify investment in speed. So the intuition here is now that the cost that we should be willing to pay to be faster is high when we have high uncertainty of future demands and low residual value, so when we lose most of the value of the stock. So what does this mean for the producer? It means that we can think it like a 2x2 matrix, where we have a demand uncertainty here on the y-axis and profit margin here. It means that in order to make any sense to invest in in speed and flexibility, we need to have these what I call innovative products, which have high demand uncertainty and high profits. And they lose their value in inventory fast. So this is what we need to have in order to build these kind of responsive and fast supply chains. If we're only producing and selling toilet paper, speed doesn't matter. It has no value. And this is the case here. So when we have low profit margins, low demand volatilities, these type of products which are easy to predict and which will have a lower profit margins, there is no sense to invest in speed for those products. And most of the stuff that we are doing anyway is somewhere here in between, so-called. And this is where most of the managerial focus goes. But if we talk about investing in faster supply chains, we should be focusing on here and here. So what is the solution then? Clearly, it seems to be that the intuitive solution is that these guys here, offshore, these guys here, build a local capacity, build a Adidas speed factory, and do these guys here, the innovative products. The challenge, that is unfortunately a wrong answer. The challenge is that if we do that, let's think that this is our production capacity every day. The dark one is a demand for the running shoe that needs to be filled each day. The challenge is that when we have unpredictable demand, we don't know what the demand is tomorrow. If we want to fill in the orders with a good customer service level, we need to take a fair amount of capacity to meet these peaks here. The problem is that then when we get the year's financial results, the bosses will say that we're running so much capacity. There's no point we're running a low utilization and low profitability. We need to squeeze this in. We need to rationalize. We start rationalizing. What happens then is that we are, as we increase the utilization of our plants, we will increase the lead times, and soon we have as unresponsive factory locally as we would have somewhere offshore. So, and another thing that happens is that if we ship all of the standard products out, we will be left off with our local factory and local supply chain with quite a low volume products, which means that we will be investing less in the production technology, we will be learning less there. And this really leads into this kind of a margin retreat behavior where you first, from the local more higher cost factory, for example, in Switzerland, we have a lot of examples like this. So at the first phase, we take the standard products out, we ship them offshore, we only left over with innovative products, and then we say that we focus on R&D and innovation now in our Swiss unit. The challenge is that, as I explained earlier, we need to do this rationalization, and we will invest less. So the next phase will be that the Swiss unit will be closed. This might not be such a problem if you're a multinational, but it might be a problem since a lot of the knowledge that we need for innovation and development is tacit knowledge. It's not written somewhere, but it's within the people. So when you close facilities, you let go people that actually make the innovation happen. So this is something that we should be conscious or mindful about. An example from totally different industry, and this is slightly maybe a pointy example, but from solar panel production. So my point is that we should be mindful when we do these manufacturing, offshoring, reshoring decisions, and where do we produce, because that also affects the learning and innovation that we can do. For example, the solar panels, in the 2000s, when most of the solar panels production went to China, following with few years, here is the global patents on solar panels, PVs. So within few years, most of those came from China too, which is fine. It's just that now all of the other countries need to buy the equipment and knowledge from China, and if they're willing to sell at the at a good price, then that's fine. But we should be mindful of this when we make these decisions. And another patent study in US found that there is this kind of a deception type of thing that we think that innovation and manufacturing jobs would be substitutes. So when we send offshore our manufacturing, we would be getting somehow some innovation jobs in between. But that, as we've studied in academia, is that actually they are complements. So innovation will follow manufacturing. So where we send the manufacturing in many industries, the innovation will go there too. So what is the solution? What we propose is a volatility portfolio, and it just means that we take actually, we don't ship all of the standardized stuff offshore. We take these innovative and standardized products. We need these standardized products to be able to fill in the volumes of our local factories, to be able to fill in these blanks here with production. We can think it of as a daily schedule type of thing. So in the morning we come, we have customized orders for some sneakers which carry a high margin but need to be filled by the same day. So in the morning we start producing and we produce those sneakers. And as we've filled in the daily requirements for that, we're going to start producing the white t-shirts to stock and so on. So in this way we can have this high responsiveness for the innovative stuff, and then we can be efficient for the standardized product. And what is one missing piece here is our costing systems. So we tend often to cost these things by the way that they use our design or manufacturing capacity and so on. And in order to make this idea work, we need to take this capacity that we need to be able to be fast. And we need to cost it on the products that actually need it. And then the standardized products, which we use just to fill in, need just to pay for the variable margins. So essentially what we are doing is that we are creating a low-cost offshore supplier onshore by doing this. So what we found out in US discussing the garment people there is that when we did the math, is actually, especially if we take into account the duties, actually most of the stuff we could be profitably making in US. The reason is that since the demand is pretty uncertain in the fashion industry, there is a lot of this demand supply mismatch, and if we allocate if we really make the calculation and analysis on that, that is actually quite costly. So we will be able to pay a lot more if we can produce closer to the actual sales dates. And this becomes especially interesting when we have the future coming where we can be able to recycle the fibers and so on. And this is something some of you know a lot more than me, but basically when we can melt cotton or Tencel and these kind of things, and when we are able to remove the old coatings, then we have a recycled source locally of raw materials. So we've done this a lot more in other industries too, from university hospitals to consumer electronics. I'm not going to talk about that so much now, but if you're interested, I'll be here after the talk. But implementing this is hard, since we tend to focus on the volume stuff instead of the innovative opportunities, the opportunities to really serve a customer and make an effort and grab the higher margin that we need to make this local strategy work. So this is a kind of a counterintuitive strategy in that sense. And the challenge is to jump over the decision threshold. So one additional thing that we've done is that we've designed this competitive online game, which I should probably have a link here, but this is freely available. You can go out and test. And in this game, you need to play as a supply chain designer for ski wear. So you are sourcing two different ski wear jackets, one which is fashionable jacket that's going to lose all of its value, if you're not selling it this winter, and one which is some kind of a standard black one that you can still sell later that only has a holding cost. And you need to optimize and try to make a sustainable decision by using offshore sources and onshore sources and trying to find out a balance. And yeah, I would like to play this game with you now, but I don't think that I have time. So anyway, it's available. If you're interested in these topics, you can find the slides on the Performance Days websites and take a look. Or send me an email. So now I think I'm gonna summarize before you fall into a sleep. So basically, in order to make this fast supply chain, the speedy supply chain work, we need to think like bankers. How do bankers make money? We need to make money out of volatility. So we need to embrace, actually, instead of trying to kill out the uncertainty, we need to go towards the uncertainty and use capacity to make money out of it. We need to value jumps and different opportunities, surprises that emerge, and we need to invest in portfolios instead of single stocks. We need to invest in portfolios, we need to make money out of volatility. And if we can postpone the decisions that we need, the production commitment, until we have a good view on what the consumer actually wants, then we will increase the sustainability by a lot. And also, lastly, we should be interested in this because a lot of the big players in the industry seem to be interested in speed. So with that, thank you and have a good fair. Yeah, if there's any questions, I'll...
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to www.performancedays.com. Copyright April 2018 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.